This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change the point it, tune it, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, gem and lock it, surf it.
You are listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. I'm Michael, and in the studio with me today is Nicole.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, yeah, good. Despite the weather, it's not too bad.
It's a bit of a grey, dull day, isn't
it? Yeah, that's okay. We're inside, so that's fine.
That is good. And we also have Donna.
Hello, how are you?
We missed you, Donna, last week.
I wasn't here last week. But, you say it's dull and grey, but I love this kind of weather. I think this is like Melbourne's time to shine. It's like, there's cold and rainy and we have hot drinks inside. Okay, I'll stop now. Everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy.
It is a nice day to be in bed underneath a very warm blanket.
Yes. Or in a radio studio talking to our wonderful people about wonderful technology.
Yes, on an Anzac Day as well. So we've got a busy show today because we're going to be starting off by looking at something that's been called Google's Mobilegeddon.
Mobilegeddon.
Mm. Play on words there.
Oh, God. Who thinks up of these names? Really?
Someone with not very much imagination.
Yeah, perhaps too much time on the hand. Don't know. And we're also going to be looking at the latest iOS security vulnerability that can crash your phone. Mm. We have a special guest in the studio a little bit later on, Rune, who is part of National Youth Week. She's here and she's going to talk to us about National Youth Week and about her interests in robotics and nanotechnology.
Yay. We were talking about that last week.
Yes, indeed. And looking forward to having that chat. We're also going to be looking at Twitter's latest response to online bullying and how it came a little bit too late for UK LGBTIQ notable Jack Munro. Jason will be joining us on the telephone to look at the latest phones from Samsung as well as other Google-related stories.
Very good, very good.
Busy, busy day. So don't forget, you can contact us on 1300-JOIN-949 and leave a message, or you can text us 0427-JOIN-949.
Or on air at joy.org.au.
Or catch us on the Twitters at Technogaze.
Technogaze. We've had a mini Facebook flurry.
We have.
Haven't we, Nicole?
We've had a few likes over this week. So we'd like to say hello to Renz, Victoria, Paul and Richard.
Hello. Welcome.
Welcome indeed. Aboard. Yes. Let's kick off with having a look at this new iOS zero-day vulnerability.
This is a bit scary. Or, I don't know if it's so much scary or as potentially very annoying.
I think more annoying because I don't think it can do any damage as such.
So what is it that actually happens with this one? It's something to do with, with the Wi-Fi being abused.
So it's called No iOS Zone. And again, somebody's thought up of this wonderful name. It's called a zero-day exploit because it's something that researchers hadn't known about, and somebody found the vulnerability and was able to exploit it. Now, luckily for everybody concerned, it was security researchers, and they demoed it at a recent RSA conference, which is an annual security conference, say, hey, this happens. So what happens is that there's a flaw in iOS to do with Wi-Fi, and that if your iOS device, so your telephone or your iPad, there's a third thing that Apple have... Anyway, iPod.
iPod. Yes. iPad, mm-hmm. iPod, iPhone.
Just anything with an I.
And soon an iWatch.
Exactly. if your iOS device comes into range of essentially a malicious Wi-Fi access point, you don't even have to try to connect onto it. What can happen is the malicious access point can send out malformed security certificates to devices, and the device will read it and try to, just because it needs to know what access points are around, and that's enough to cause your iOS device to crash and reboot.
I'm having this kind of flashback to the last century and the ping of death, which Apple machines were really were susceptible to. It sounds like a new ping of death for iDevices.
But it's the Wi-Fi ping of death.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So there's not much more information out there about it, because obviously everyone's trying to keep it quiet so that nobody actually does implement it in the real world. And the discoverers are currently working with Apple to try and fix it.
Well, at least they're doing something about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that's interesting about security issues. There's a kind of race between, you know, when the vulnerability is discovered and how quickly, you know, exploits are made available to exploit that vulnerability. And that's why 0 days are so difficult, because, you know, it's the same, it's released and enough information is available to start exploiting it straight away. But maybe I'm being a little bit naive on this one, but I think it sounds like you've got to have a lot of stuff in place to really be able to exploit this. You have to be in control of the wireless access point that's, you know, to modify it to start being malicious.
But I suppose because
they're so mobile themselves now, anyone can bring one anywhere
exactly.
into a crowded area. It could cause havoc.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I expect that Apple will be sort of out there with an iOS patch shortly that will fix it.
Updates all round. Hello.
More updates.
Yeah.
The ISPs must love it, especially the ones that have got very small data quotas. Especially if you have multiple iOS devices in your house.
And isn't there a thing that some of the ISPs actually don't push the updates through because it causes so much so much traffic to their support calls and stuff? People go, oh, my thing's changed and I don't know why. So they don't put through the updates through, but surely with security ones they would.
Security ones they would. And that's where there's a huge difference between the Apple iOS model and the Google Android model, in that Google relies on both the manufacturer and the telco to push through an update.
Whereas Apple owns it and
mm-hmm. sort of you use iTunes and you download it and boom, you have it whenever you want it.
It's one of those things that you don't even think about. You just tend to just push the button and download. You don't even pay attention to why.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
You do not read the fine print.
Which is a danger in itself,
exactly.
isn't it? Mobilegeddon. Da-dum.
Dum-dum. Is it that though, really?
Well, no, but it makes a nice headline, doesn't it?
it's hyper drama, really. But this is around Google changing its super secret algorithm on how it ranks pages on the web. So people mm-hmm. who do web development and people who have websites are very conscious of their Google page rank and work really hard to make sure that their ranking is good and high. Well, Google have just changed the rules again, and they do this periodically. And this time they've said, if your website is not mobile friendly, we will be pushing it down the rankings in favor of sites that are mobile friendly.
Though it's only just for pages. So if your page isn't actually to its level, there are certain things that you need to do to put in place so that the page is actually working in a mobile way. So it doesn't apply to desktop websites. It's more about the mobile side of it. So if I'm looking at a website on a mobile and it's not displaying the way it should, then that's where you can have that issue there.
Oh, so it doesn't apply to all websites, only those that are trying to be mobile? Or
no, it applies to the device that you're using to access
Correct.
The website. So if you're using a telephone, then it will implement this ranking. And it won't do it for the whole website. It will do it for the page that you are trying to see through the Google search engine. So, for instance, you did a search on Joy and Technogaze, and you got the Technogaze podcast page. If the Technogaze podcast page wasn't mobile compliant, and we'll talk about what that means in a minute, then that perhaps will be ranked lower down than somebody else's link to Joy and Technogaze, which won't exist, so that doesn't really matter, does it? So, and they'll filter it that way. But if you're doing the same query from either a tablet or a desktop, then it makes no difference.
So there are a few things that you consider putting in place, such as things like text needs to be readable. So if you're on a mobile and you're having to scroll up to see something, then that's considered not mobile friendly. And things like buttons. So buttons are done in a way that, you know, you can actually use your thumb or your finger to click on it.
Yes, rather than sort of pressing
sort of
the
going,
wrong button.
You're pressing it quite a few times for it to work. So things like that, and also Flash as well. There's still a lot of Flash sites out there as well.
I think the terminology they use is it avoids software not common in the mobile environment like Flash. So that gives them the ability to filter out different things. The ability to, or the need to scroll horizontally is mm-hmm. also a no-no. So if you do need to scroll sideways, then you're not mobile friendly. And there is a website, if anybody's interested, out of google.com that webmasters can use under the webmasters tools, and it's called Mobile Friendly, where you can actually check individual pages of your website. So again, it only ranks the pages that are trying to be retrieved. So if you have 100 pages and only one turns up on, let's say, a search engine for whatever reason, then you only need to make that one the mobile friendly one to make sure that your ranking doesn't change with that.
It's one of those things too that it's probably a good idea to start looking at your website and seeing how you can effectively make it mobile friendly, because that's where it's all going anyway.
Yeah.
And just taking that sort of care with making sure that your site does work on other devices. So if you aren't sort of doing that at the moment, it's probably one of those things to consider.
Yeah, and putting my Drupal hat on, it's certainly something that's been big in the Drupal world, and the new version of Drupal that's coming out
supporting mobile devices
will be mobile friendly out of the box.
Yeah. Right. Which will make the people who is responsible for publishing those websites using that technology
a
lot easier. Yeah, rather than doing something special.
Well, it's been an evolution probably over the past probably three to four years, I guess, mm-hmm. that more and more responsive or mobile responsive technologies and web and adaptive responsive have come into the, you know, into the field, and it's kind of only just maturing. So, I think it's probably timely. Like you say, it's a good thing for people to be thinking about this, and if Google is going to force people's hands a little faster than perhaps they would have, then, hey, that's not such a bad thing.
No, everyone's going to win in that situation. It's 5:15. This is Technogaze.
Technogaze.
Last week was National Youth Week, and that's the largest celebration of youth in Australia, with thousands of young people aged 12 to 25 participating. In the studio, we have VCE student Rune with us to talk about National Youth Week as well as technology. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Tell us a little bit about how you became involved with National Youth Week.
Well, I'm a member of the GASP Action team, and we decided to plan, actually it might have been decided before I even joined, for a free hugs day on Tuesday up in Geelong.
A free hugs day?
Yeah, and we had like these smoothie bikes and, you know, just gave out hugs, trying to show people that we weren't really so scary.
Right.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting and fun.
Oh, yeah, it's sort of... you know, start out a bit awkward because no one really knew how to approach strangers and be like, yes, you want a hug? You want a high five? But
yeah,
then, you know, got a lot more comfortable towards the end of it.
As you're getting into it.
Yeah.
How many people were involved in that, Rune?
We had the BIAC group, which was another one of the groups like GASP. And then we had most of the GASP people. And I think there might have been a couple of volunteers. There's like over 20 of us.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, and we were handing out free packets to sort of show people, you know, and there were like headphones and drink bowls and those and anti-bullying pamphlets.
So what other kinds of activities were happening in a National Youth Week?
I'm not really too sure. I only knew the ones I was involved in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that leads to the other question. How did you actually start or get involved?
Well, I joined GASP last school holidays towards the beginning of the year. And I thought, yeah, this was a good idea. And then they started an action team and it just sort of progressed.
And is GASP something that's inside the school that you're attending, or is it sort of a broader...
It's outside of my school.
So it's a type of youth movement?
Yeah.
Right. And do you have regular functions?
Yeah, we meet up on Tuesdays and just talk. And
right,
we have guest speakers sometimes.
Okay.
So we're pretty relaxed.
And, you know, one of the things when I was reading your bio, you were talking about that, you know, youth as a group tend not to be noticed or their voice not listened to. Tell us a little bit about your feelings in that area.
Well, whenever I've tried speaking to adults about adult conversations that apparently we shouldn't really be discussing or know too much about, this sort of like, you're too young for this. Just
right,
calm down. Just wait a couple more years, like 20 more years.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty condescending.
Yeah, it's a little annoying.
So how do you go around that to make it a bit more positive out of that sort of, if people are sort of saying that to you, what would you sort of say?
I just sort of say, you know, if I shouldn't be part of this conversation, why are you having it in front of me? And just like give them my 2 cents on it. Even if they ignore me, at least I've said a piece on it.
Perfect.
And Do you think technology is allowing sort of youth as a group to be able to, I guess, express themselves more than what would have been in the past?
Definitely. I mean, we have all this social media, and even if, you know, we don't do the best with it,
yes,
at least we have the opportunities to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I might evolve to be something way more positive in the future.
And I guess when you're reading something online, you don't know whether it's coming from somebody that's, you know, a teenager or somebody that's 70 years old. It's just an opinion, and you either like it and respect it, or you don't like it, or and so on.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a person's opinion. It doesn't matter their age. It doesn't matter the education they've had, mm-hmm. or may not have had. It doesn't matter where they're from in life. It's someone's opinion on any topic.
Right. You also said in your bio that you're when you finish VCE that you're currently studying, that you're looking to study either in the robotics or the nanotechnology fields.
Yeah.
Sounds exciting. Why? What interests you about that?
I'm a major sci-fi geek, mm-hmm. and it's just sort of something that always struck me as pretty awesome. And then, like, you'd see these androids in Star Trek, and they just look so realistic and have amazing AIs, and it's like, I want that to be today.
So what kind of areas of robotics have you been involved in or looking at so far?
Not really involved in anything because my school doesn't actually have a robotics program. We're looking in AI right now for mm-hmm. IT, so that's similar too. But I was just sort of thinking, you know, get the basics and then specialise on it.
Sure. It's a while since I've looked at AI. What can you tell me about where that's at?
Well, we have pattern recognition AI right now. So there's this program where you can play rock, paper, scissors with a learning AI. And it's like, oh, your last couple of moves have been rock, rock, rock. Well, all these other players, when they've done rock, 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 choose scissors next. So I'm going to use paper, no rock.
So it basically uses pattern recognition across a whole bunch of different users and their responses to then try to predict what you're going to do next and give you an option based on that prediction.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because two different types of AI, one where it learns from you directly, but then there's also the one that's using all these other players that it's already been up against. So it's like thousands of people used rock next and then does its move on that. And then you're also helping it learn more with the patterns just by playing this game of rock, paper, scissors.
That's pretty cool.
I wanted to ask you, have you seen the latest film, Chappie?
No.
Okay, so I just wanted to, I guess, Chappie is all about, I guess, consciousness, so having the ability for a robot to actually think on its own. How do you feel about that sort of technology if it was to ever come about?
I think that was pretty awesome. Like, I'd want to talk to it, but then it'd be like the Turing game and it would just, the imitation game. So when something gets as close to being, you know, the consciousness of human, it's just, how do we define life then? And then it's like the whole meaning of life thing. And that's...
It does raise a whole bunch of questions. And one of the things I find, and this is in terms of generational, is that artificial intelligence is something that I think people who are probably older, you know, maybe some of our age and not your age, are going to be scared about. How do you think that younger people feel about the possibility of having artificial intelligence where you've got essentially machines thinking for themselves and acting autonomously?
Well, it'd be like a human making decisions as mm-hmm. well. It might have a bit more power if you think, you know, in pop culture there's GLaDOS and HAL 9000. But with HAL 9000, it was more trying to not die, while GLaDOS was like experiment on all humans.
Yeah.
So really, when it comes to an AI thinking as a human, but having just different possibilities based on the power it has, it's all up to it. It'd be like if a human, like if you had one button and you can destroy the entire planet with that button, right, and get whatever you want.
Yep.
It'll just change per person.
Right. Okay. So it's no difference from that perspective. I guess the difference is it's something new, and it's like you said, it's a new life form. It's a new sentient being.
And it's interesting the way sci-fi has presented these kinds of concepts to us over the years, right? Sometimes they are they're benevolent, they're friendly AIs that are there to help us. And then we have the kind of, you know, horror story type AIs that are going to take over the world and kill us and become. But, you know, the reality is probably going to be somewhere in between. And if we're still writing the programs that start this, then, you know, we only have ourselves to blame for the way it turns out, right?
Yeah, it's like sort of when people say you learn from your parents. When you're writing an AI, you're sort of its parent or her parents or their parents.
It's a good way of saying it.
Actually, I do like that analogy.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
You're also interested in nanotechnology. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, that's sort of also going back to, you know, being a major sci-fi geek, and it's just completely tiny machines.
Well, that it makes me think of like the Borg stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's actually kind of awesome. But there are just all these different possibilities for it. Like, you could use it in place of vaccines. I would even replace someone's immune system with it if we can get advanced enough. So we might be able to cure cancer before it even happens if we've got these little robots in us that detect the signs that we might not even notice.
So speaking of that, do you have sort of an idea as to what you want to use technology for?
Improving. Just improving on people, improving on the technology we already have. Just like keep evolving.
Mm-hmm. As a sort of next stage of human evolution to sort of augment technology, whether it's robotics or making use of AI, or whether or not it's introducing, you know, nanotech for medical uses. It's this kind of next step is where you're thinking it's most interesting.
Yeah. Cool. I sort of want sci-fi's like the really awesome one where everything good happens, like diseases are all gone and stuff. I kind of want that future.
I like that idea. Now. Yeah.
I was going to ask, you mentioned in your bio that you're looking at possibly writing a book and taking a year off. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I was thinking, you know, take a couple years off, maybe a gap year or so, and just sort of backpack and travel, see where I end up, and if I get inspired, I'll write something. But I'm sort of trying to plan out a book right now, but they always end up being like dystopian sort of books.
It's must be hard trying to do that and study at the same time.
Yeah, it's sort of like, oh, I really want to write down 500 words. It doesn't sound like a lot. But then it's like, I've got all this chemistry homework and all this IT homework and this physics stuff I need to do. And it sort of piles it on.
And the book is more appealing?
The book is definitely more appealing.
Actually, that's one thing that hasn't changed in many, many years, because I remember when I was doing sort of VC, only it wasn't VC back then, I used to do things like strip wallpaper off my bedroom wall because it was more appealing than studying. So some things really, really do not change. In the last, I guess, 20 to 30 years, there's been a huge change in technology in terms of communication, and, you know, everyone's got smartphones, and, you know, I know that growing up, my parents would talk about the story with Dick Tracy and having the watch phone and being able to talk on that, and that's all here today. What do you think the future is going to look like in 30 or 40 years' time when all these advances have taken place?
I think either the world's completely going to crash and we're going to go back to 100 years before, or it's just going to keep going and going, and all that unrealistic sci-fi stuff that breaks the laws of physics will happen, like cybernetic implants, like right in your ear, so you don't even need to answer a phone.
That sounds perfect.
That would probably help me.
I think it would help a lot of people, wouldn't it?
I think I'd have mine perpetually on the engaged signal.
Or do not disturb.
Do not disturb. Hey, I've got one more question for you, Rune. We had a few different topics and stuff up, and one which is that they're saying that younger people today just aren't watching TV. Is that true?
We're watching TV in a different way.
In a different
way.
That's
what we thought.
Yeah, like Netflix or like streaming Netflix. Online. It's still TV, but without like the ad breaks and such.
And does like 4K high definition television, is that of interest, or you don't really care what the resolution's like and what the performance is like?
I think I'd prefer a really good TV show over something that works amazingly well. Like if I can have both, that'd be amazing.
Yep.
But if I could only choose one, I'd choose
better content rather than more technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting the divergence between, what different generations, how they consume media.
It's 28 minutes past 5 o'clock.
Technogaze. It is exactly 5:30, and you're listening to Technogaze with Michael, Nicole, Donna, and our special guest, Rune. And Rune, I'd just like to say thank you very much for having a chat with us before, and please stay on for the rest of the show.
Sure thing.
So, in other tech news, specifically in GLBTIQ tech news, and the Marvel Comics is following through with their desire to put more diversity amongst its characters. And as part of that, somebody is coming out of the closet.
That would be Iceman.
Yes. And there were some leaks earlier on, well, I think it was early last week, of some panels from the all-new X-Men number 40 comic, but that was confirmed this week when the comic was actually published. And in a bit of a, I guess, a, not convoluted, a little bit of a complex storyline, Bobby Drake from the past is transported to the future along with the original X-Men to help solve a crisis, and during this we find out that Iceman is in fact gay. So that's good.
I guess there's a 50-50, isn't there? You know, some people like it, some people don't.
Yes, and I think part of the discussion was that it is the Bobby from the past that's come out as gay, mm-hmm. the younger Bobby, and not the present-day Bobby who's been around since 1963, which isn't so long ago, is it really?
And they're basically saying that shouldn't he have come out already? That's what they're saying.
But
it sounds like the time travel bit kind of complicates this unnecessarily.
Exactly.
Because it brings both the old and the new characters together. Right. Yes, it does. But to answer your, shouldn't he have come out already? Well, you know, people take their time and
exactly.
people do it when they're ready. So, you know, what's wrong with this? But Iceman's not the only comic character to have come out.
No. It's also Catwoman.
Yes. She came out as bisexual mm-hmm. a while ago?
This year,
okay.
Officially.
Mm-hmm.
Genevieve Valentine, the writer who's now kind of in charge of Catwoman for DC Comics, confirmed rather than necessarily it was a big reveal. There was always a sort of suspicion, or some of the commentary was saying, flirting with the idea that Catwoman was bisexual. But I think the thing here is that she's confirming that this is the case, and it's not just a kind of headline-grabbing dramatic kiss, but a solid storyline involving a girlfriend and some complexities which should reveal themselves over the coming releases.
Mm-hmm. So at least, you know, the world of comics are getting a bit more reflective of the general nature of society.
Yay for representation.
Great.
Yes.
A bit more reality.
Because we are all super beings, aren't we? At least in the studio.
I feel I am a super being, whether someone agrees or not.
I think you're a super being, Nicole. I won't ask about whether or not you wear your underpants on the outside, like all superheroes, but, you know, we're on radio, so no one needs to know.
That's true.
But photos will be up on Facebook later on.
Scary thought.
In the UK, British food writer, blogger and celebrated food activist Chuck Munro has left Twitter after receiving homophobic abuse. She asked her fans not to respond to the attacks on her behalf, and these attacks started after she recently praised the Green Party leader. Munro herself is a Labour Party member. So it's sad that there's, you know, such hate being directed against an individual through Twitter like this.
And this is not that long after, I think, another British kind of food writer person, Sue Perkins, also quit Twitter for similar reasons. And, it's in this what's that word I'm looking for? It's this atmosphere of abuse and hatred and stuff going on Twitter, and it's been going on for a while. So, you know, it's interesting that there are these now people are really sort of standing up and saying, you know, I've had enough. I'm just out of here. And that sort of led to Twitter finally doing something. Some people saying too little, too late.
Yes, Twitter have come to the party. And part of the reason why I think there is this unchecked abuse is that it's so easy to get up there and say something.
Behind something,
yeah, that's right. You're hiding behind your real identity, whereas if you had to stand up in the middle of a room and shout it or whatever, you just wouldn't do it. Twitter's gone through, and actually, in fact, Twitter's lawyers, one of their top lawyers has even admitted that they've been inexcusably slow in tackling abusers. And so they've recently introduced a range of upgrades to its system to cut down on trolling and harassment.
And they're using a range of tools as well that they normally only celebrities have access to. So they're starting to provide other solutions where you can actually block and do other various things as well so that you're not having this type of abuse.
Yeah, so I didn't realise this, but celebrities and those people who had
Verified blue tick.
Get access to something called a quality filter.
Yes.
And that identifies troublemakers. So now, as you said, instead of just being the purview of the celebrities, everybody who's on Twitter will be able to take advantage of this. Although I think it's probably something that happens automatically.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think I'm quite conflicted about this. I think Twitter really stood up in its early days to say we're really big supporters of free speech. We're really big supporters of people being able to be themselves and say anything. And then we've got the flip side of, you know, saying anything means saying horrible things, and that's actually really hurtful and unpleasant and not a good thing. But now we're getting to this point where we're sort of filtering what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable, and it raises lots of really kind of important questions about, you know, the role of technology in mediating all of our communications and who gets to say what is acceptable and what isn't. And when we're talking about personal, you know, vitriol and vindictive behaviour between real human beings is one thing. But what about when it starts being used to censor whole kind of areas of speech that perhaps of people who don't normally get to have a voice, are from parts of the world that perhaps don't have access to things? You know, I think there's some really gnarly problems in here. And one of the things that Twitter has done is introduced this idea of shadow blocking. So, you know, if you exhibit a certain pattern of discourse on Twitter, then you're likely to get blocked, and then you're going to have to play certain, you know, engage in certain behaviours to get unblocked.
So it's like 12 or 24 hour block that you receive.
Yeah.
But then the problem with that as well is that does the actual person learn from that?
Right.
Is it just blocking and then, okay, I'll just create another account and continue?
But there is, but okay, that's one of the actions. Another action is that they can insist that you verify your account via a phone number. So that way you actually have to identify yourself. And yes, you can get burner phone numbers and things like that, but it's just a level of degree of difficulty to do that. And I think the other thing that you can do is they can obviously make you remove offensive posts before they let you back on.
Mm-hmm.
And they also may...
No one confused me. Why wouldn't Twitter just delete it?
I don't know. Maybe it's better for the person themselves to take it down.
Yeah, okay.
So the person actually does it.
Personal responsibility.
Yeah, exactly, rather than Twitter.
Yeah, and they can also apparently force users to tweet an apology or to retype Twitter's anti-abuse policies.
I think that feels like a joke.
That feels like a little bit of a schoolyard.
Yeah.
And you have detention. You must write all that in.
And that was the tone of an article that I read in the Register about this, that it was very much, you know, this is like becoming, you know, school principal, taking him to the office and stuff like that, which I just thought was a little bit unfair. One of the other things that I thought was good is that previously promoting violence or threatening somebody with violence, it was unacceptable, and this still stands, but also promoting violence against somebody else. So, you know, it's almost like the crowd egging somebody else on to, you know, go ahead and do whatever you're going to do. That's also banned.
Yeah.
Which is good. But yes, Donna, you make a valid point in that where's the start, where's the stop? But is it any different from every other walk of life?
No, in that respect, it's not at all. And that's what I find interesting is that there's actually a shift underway. I actually think it's great. But there's been, in the past, Twitter has been aggressively pro-free speech at the expense of hurt feelings, you know, I'm using air quotes here. But the reality is that those hurt feelings are extremely hurtful, and we've now seen the kind of the worst extent of cyberbullying where people are actually committing suicide because of these kinds of things. And Twitter is now acknowledging that it's, you know, it's a really serious problem, and it's not just about, you know, well, people should have the right to say whatever they want to say. Well, actually, maybe they also need to take responsibility for what's saying those things.
Indeed. I've got a question for Rune. How are you aware of technology being used, either Facebook or Twitter or something like that, in terms of bullying young people?
Oh, definitely. I've been bullied through it before, and I've done some actions that may count as bullying, which there was always stuff going on in the background of it. So with this, it's sort of like, are we seeing the whole story here? Like, are we just seeing people attacking other people for no apparent reason? Or is there stuff going on behind the scenes? Or just people being offensive for the sake of being offensive? But then people might also truly believe this, and that's when free speech sort of becomes a bit blurred. Like, when do we start censoring out all these people whose actual opinions are, you know, completely against this, even though people are using that reason as a hate reason? Does that make sense?
No, definitely it does. Does make sense. And sometimes you do see people actually going on to sort of a rant, and they don't really know about what's actually going on, but they feel compelled to be a part of it, and it becomes like a group sort of bullying aspect rather than a cause or a belief or or other sort of aspect.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just drawing that line in the sand, like what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable.
And another, you know, one of the, I think, dangers with cyberbullying is that it's a very private thing, because if you are, you know, this, if you're the object of the bullying, you're reading it at home, at work, or wherever it is, but it's just you and the device that you're using to read. Whereas if it's traditional one-on-one bullying, the chances are it's out maybe school playfield or it's somewhere else. There may be witnesses and so on. So, and depending on the person that's being bullied, they may not feel that they have got the ability to ask for help from family, friends, or whatever the case may be.
Definitely. I've had this happen to me where I was talking to someone over Facebook. We go into this really heated argument, and then I felt I was alone, so I wrote something on their Facebook page saying, this person is doing these things to me, I'm doing these things back, can someone help me? Mm. Someone took that as being aggressive and got like an entire year to attack me on Facebook. And I just ended in tears because I just wanted some help.
Yeah, that's...
And that's the thing, maybe there isn't, there needs to be some sort of system where it helps young people to actually know how to, you know, how to stop that. So rather than actually writing maybe a message, like what would you do in that sort of circumstance?
And not just young people. I've just, a friend of mine was recently involved in some fairly nasty stuff happening on Facebook. And, you know, I think that the point of, you know, how do you find a good way of reaching out and asking for help? How do we deal better with conflict and have mediation processes in place so that we don't end up, you know, with everybody coming down on us and, you know, feeling attacked and isolated? Because that's not helping anyone, really.
Yeah. Rune, during your school studies, do you cover anything about how people should react when they see something like that online?
No, we just talk about if you're being bullied, ask for help.
Right, okay.
If you see someone being bullied, go to a parent or a teacher.
Mm-hmm. But nothing that says, you know, as a collective year, don't jump in and sort of all harass this one person for whatever reason, that there are other ways of getting your message across.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. Okay.
In my case, I didn't think the message was aggressive. It may have been by the way people were reacting, but it was more just people yelling nonsense.
Yeah.
And they weren't even bothering asking questions. They were just sort of attacking me.
Right.
And it was just...
And that's the thing, you know, people have different interpretations. So that also can be the problem too.
And that's another issue with the internet, because there's no tone of voice, there's no body language, you just see words.
Correct.
Yes.
And then those words are up to interpretation and all this stuff happens.
Indeed. It took me a long time to get over reading haha and not taking it personally like somebody was laughing at me and just thinking, oh, well, somebody's just laughing. And because that's, you know, I would have used haha as a bit of a, you know, bit of a dig. Yes. Maybe when we all have, I don't know, voicemail? No, we have voicemail. Recorded messages, you can see facial expression. Life will be easier.
Technogaze.
You are listening to Technogaze at 14 minutes to 6. I am Michael. We have Nicole, Donna and Rune in the studio. And coming across the telephone lines, we have Jason, if I've pressed the right buttons. Jason, are you there?
I hope so. How are you?
You are indeed. I am very well. How are you?
I'm great. We just had a freak hailstorm move through Sydney. It's amazing.
Oh, really? You guys have had a lot of bad weather recently.
We have. I actually went out to the park earlier and flew a drone around and nearly got sunburned, and now there's hail. There's literally ice on my garden.
Did you say fly a drone?
I did fly a drone earlier. I had a couple of review units.
You,
it's fun. But that's not what I'm here for, really, is it? But drones are cool,
damn.
Indeed, drones are very, very cool. I was just going to say that Sydney's sounding like Melbourne with your weather changes. But you are here because you've got some new telephones.
I do.
Or smartphones, I should say.
Look, I think they're still telephones, aren't they?
I don't know. Do you ever use it as a telephone or often as a telephone?
I'm using it as a telephone right now.
Yeah, that's true. Your phone, Michael.
You are speaking to me on my smartphone.
Which one?
So I have a Galaxy S6 in my hand and I have a Galaxy S6 Edge on the desk in front of me. Which one would you guys like to hear about first?
The Edge.
The Edge. Everyone wants to hear about the Edge. It's kind of freaky. It's Samsung being out there and just going, yeah, look, we can build this and we're going to do it. If you haven't seen it, which, you know, they've been running a lot of ads for it, the left and right edges of the phone. They sort of slope off, and the screen continues around these slopes down to the side. And so you can run your hand sort of up the edge and across the screen and then down the other edge, left to right.
And they introduced that with the Note last year, didn't they?
They did. There'd been a lot of... Apparently they showed some kind of prototype of the technology a couple of years ago, and then people have been waiting for it ever since. When they put it on the Note, everyone sort of went, yeah, great. Oh, that costs $300 extra. I don't really want that. So for the Galaxy S6, it's an extra $150 to get the edge displays on both sides. So the price of that technology is coming down. But I do think that they haven't really made the case of why you need edge displays.
Yeah, what is the benefit? I can imagine if you have a bookshelf full of phones stacked on their side, like a traditional book, then you could have a look at these, you know, the spine of it and see what...
Well, if you get a message coming through and it's on your desk and you're in a meeting...
Oh, that's good. Do they do that? Do they actually put the message on there?
I'm pretty sure it does.
I think with that, you're better served with an Android Wear watch. But I know we're going to talk about that. So the thing is that what they've done is they've said, right, if you've got your phone face down on the desk during a meeting and you receive a call, you can assign colours to your contacts, and then you'll see the colour sort of shine out to the side of the phone. To me, that's not really worth it's not really worth the premium. There are other possible uses for the edge display, but none of them have really caught fire. But that's that's the edge anyway. There's other things to talk about with the S6 and the S6 Edge. My preference is, as you can probably tell, for just the plain Galaxy S6. But the phone, they've changed their design language this year. They haven't really changed the way the phone looks, but they've constructed it out of glass and metal, where previously we used to give Samsung we used to make fun of them for having plastic phones. Yeah.
But that also means that you've lost the ability to pull out the battery, doesn't it?
Yeah, so this is true. They've gone to a sealed-in battery this year, and they've also forsaken the SD card, which they clung to for a really long time as selling points for the S4 and the S5. To make up for the lack of SD card, the phone's available in 64 and 128 gig versions, but the battery is a little bit more. It's a little bit more difficult to get around because the phone doesn't have. It doesn't have great battery life, but the phone does have quick charging technology, and it's got wireless charging built in. So if you're sitting at your desk most of the day, you can leave your phone on a charging pad, and when you leave the office, you'll have 100% charge.
And is that using the Qi standard?
So there's actually a couple of standards around, and the S6 actually supports, I'm not sure if it's two or three of them, but Qi is definitely one of them. So you can go out and buy one of these cheap Qi chargers that you see online on certain sites. Or you can buy Samsung's own one, which they'll quite happily sell you one from their stores.
I do like the idea of, you know, when you go to bed, you don't have to remember to put, you know, to plug your phone into the charger. You just put it by your bedside table, and if you've got a charging mat there, then it will just charge.
That's true. I always...
That's great.
Every time I put my phone down, I always forget to charge it.
Yeah. So the thing that really sells the camera and sells the phone for me, and I just gave it away. The thing that really sells the phone for me is the camera. Michael, you've had Android phones. You know that sometimes the camera can be a little bit of an Achilles heel for an Android phone.
Yes, indeed.
And this is, I think, the first time we've ever seen an Android phone that actually has a camera that will actually go toe to toe with the iPhone. And if you believe some commentators, knock it out of the park. I've been playing with it for a little while now. I got to play with one at the launch event, and the photos of this takes, they're utterly amazing. It's got a 16-megapixel camera. It's got optical image stabilization, which is fantastic for eliminating a little bit of shake and a little bit of blur.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an f1.8 aperture on it. And so there's great low-light performance. I've taken photos of my cat, because that's what I do, in almost darkness. And you can see individual hairs, and you can see reflections in his eyeballs and stuff. It's really quite amazing.
Has this cat not any privacy?
Not really, no. if you're a cat that's owned by me, you're going to be all over the internet. And also because I just moved into an apartment where a lot of people have puppies, all of the neighbours' puppies are also all over my Instagram.
I was actually going to ask about the glass or the Gorilla Glass that surrounds it. There's a lot of people that are afraid to actually use the phone due to the fact that if they drop it, it will break on either side. So
you could get two breakages for one. Look, I don't think it's so bad. I know there are people who do. It is Gorilla Glass 4, and everyone wants to sort of look back to the iPhone 4 when everyone had a glass front and a glass back on iPhones, and they smashed very easily. I will just say, like, Gorilla Glass 4 is sort of like, it's 3 to 4 years of evolution over what we last saw on, say, the iPhone 4 and on the Nexus 4 in Android land. I think it's probably going to be okay. I think, like, if you drop a phone, you are going to smash glass on one side or the other. But, you know, there are ways to mitigate it. You can put it in a protective case. I have a very light gel case on mine because I don't really want to hide the look of the phone. But I think it's okay. There's opinion is sort of split on whether or not it's really, really slippery or if you can really just grip it in your hand quite nicely.
How big is the screen itself?
It is a 5.2-inch screen, I believe, and it's running QHD. So it's super, super high resolution, and it's a Super AMOLED screen. So it's up to the standards that we've seen from Samsung's last couple of flagship phones. They've had really, really great colour reproduction. They pop really well, and the phone gets really bright.
So it's somewhere size-wise between the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus?
Yeah, I think it's... It's probably a little bit closer to an iPhone 6 than a 6 Plus, but it's still pretty large, being a 5.2-inch screen. And Samsung adds a little bit of bezel above and below the screen. There's a fingerprint scanner on the front, which finally delivers on the promise of actually being a proper fingerprint scanner, unlike the Galaxy S5.
Right.
So there's space where they've sort of put their logos and the earpieces and buttons on the phone.
Sounds good. Now, we're running out of time rapidly, but very quickly,
I talk a lot.
That's okay. It's all interesting. Tell us a little bit about the changes to Android Wear.
So Android Wear is getting an update. Funnily enough, the week that Apple launches a watch, Android Wear gets an update coming out.
Do you think that's a coincidence?
maybe. I don't know. I actually think it's more to do with the fact that LG is launching a new watch, the LG Watch Urbane, in the next couple of days. And so this software update is going to add Wi-Fi support to Android Wear, which most Android Wear watches out there already have Wi-Fi support built into their chipset, but it's just not used by Android Wear. So what will happen is you'll be able to sit in a completely different room to your phone, so you're out of Bluetooth range, but your notifications will still be delivered to you over the internet.
Right. And what about the fact that the battery life aspect, it goes black and white, so it actually conserves the power?
Well, so that's a new feature called Always On Display. And I've actually thought quite a lot when I've been... I ride around Sydney, and sometimes I use Google Maps navigation, and sometimes I use it on my watch. But what I find frustrating is that when I'm riding along and I need directions and I need to check the directions, the navigation card has sort of disappeared, and so I need to look at my watch while I'm riding along. So with this, the navigation screen will stay on, but when I'm not looking at it, it'll turn black and white to conserve battery. And then when I do the gesture to look at the watch again, then it'll turn into full colour and sort of wake up. But I won't have to search for that card again.
Okay, that sounds really good. We've run out of time, unfortunately. You'll have to come down to the studio next time you're in Melbourne and give us a bit more detail on that. Thank you, Jason.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
This is Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Technogaze, where unfortunately we have run out of time as we usually do.
Damn.
Yes, it is. I don't know why we ran out of time. We know it's for an hour, and
we just tend to talk and talk and till the cows come home, which they never do.
Plus, we had two great guests, and we wanted to hear more from each of them.
Exactly.
We did indeed. So, once again, Rune, thank you very much for coming
in
today. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
It was great. Thank you.
To Donna and to Nicole, thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
And everybody else, that's it. If you missed any part of the show and perhaps you're listening, you know, you're looking to listen to previous episodes, you can do so by browsing joy.org.au/technogaze. The news at 6 is next with Byron, followed by Dick, who's mixing up the old and the new in this week's A Touch of Pink. Have a great weekend, and we will catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.